I want us to look at 3 John, and there are 3 men in 3 John that we want to look at, and then there are some other things along the way that we want to learn from the book of 3 John. We'll go ahead and read through the book. It's very short. So we'll go ahead and read through it, and then we'll come back and pick up those things that we want to look at this morning. The elder unto the well-beloved Gaius, whom I love in the truth. Beloved, I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in health, even as your soul prospers. For I rejoiced greatly when the brethren came and testified of the truth that is in you, even as you walk in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in the truth. Beloved, thou doest faithfully whatsoever thou doest to the brethren and to strangers, which have borne witness of thy charity before the church, whom if thou bring forward on their journey after a godly sort, you shall do well. Because that for his name's sake they went forth, taking nothing of the Gentiles. We therefore ought to receive such, that we might be fellow helpers of the truth. I wrote unto the church, but Diotrephes, who loveth to have the preeminence among them, receives us not. Wherefore, if I come, I will remember his deeds which he doeth, prating against us with malicious words, and not content therewith, neither doth he himself receive the brethren, and forbiddeth them that would, and casteth them out of the church. Beloved, follow not that which is evil, but that which is good. He that doeth good is of God, but he that doeth evil hath not seen God. Demetrius hath good report of all men, and of the truth itself. Yea, and we also bear record, and you know that our record is true. I have many things to write, but I will not with ink and pen write unto thee. But I trust I shall shortly see thee, and we shall speak face to face. Peace be to thee. Our friends salute thee. Greet the friends there by name. So we see a fairly short book. It's the kind of letter I would write, short. I was never much for writing letters, and so short ones would certainly be the ones I would write, and that's what John has written here. All 3 of his letters that he writes are fairly short. Of course, his gospel is not so short, but these, especially 2 and 3 John, just a few paragraphs to let the people know that he cares about them. Sometimes we do that kind of thing with a phone call nowadays. We just call and say, well, I just called to say hi and to see how you were doing. And we don't even write letters much anymore. We make phone calls instead, because most of the time a phone call is cheaper than sending a letter with the price of stamps nowadays. And of course, with the letter you have to wait and wait and wait to get a response. And I know John certainly was concerned about the church in all of the places where he had gone, and I can imagine how agonizing it must have been for him waiting to hear back that the church had gotten the letter. And we're going to examine one case of a letter that he wrote, and we'll see how that letter was rejected, never even received by the church. Let's look first of all throughout the book of 3 John. We want to learn about the nature of brotherly love, the nature of the fellowship that we have as Christians. And when we speak of brotherly love, we're speaking of brotherly love in the church, not physical brotherly love, but the spiritual brotherly love that we have for one another. And first, I want us to see that it is a genuine type of love. Notice in verse 2, he says, I wish above all things. It's very genuine. In fact, his greatest wish is concerning Gaius and his spirituality and his health and his prosperity. And that's the thing about brotherly love. Brotherly love is going to want that other person to do well. Not going to wish evil on that person, but going to want them to truly do well. In verse 3 he says, for I rejoiced greatly. See, brotherly love is going to rejoice with someone else who is doing well, rather than bickering and being upset that they're doing well or being jealous or envious, brotherly love is going to be joyful over that. We see that he is concerned about the welfare of his brother, Gaius. And we too should be concerned about the welfare of our brothers and sisters in Christ. He's concerned about both the physical welfare and the spiritual welfare. You see that in verse 2. He says, I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in health. That's the physical welfare. Prosper. He wants him to do well. He wants him to have financial stability. He wants him to have a place to live and clothes to wear and food to eat. He wants him to have those things that you need to survive life. And to be in health. He wants him to be a healthy person. He wants that physical body to be in good shape. But notice the qualification he puts on it. Even as your soul prospers. What if all of us, what if you, what if I, what if we were as healthy physically as we are spiritually? What kind of shape would we be in? Would we be sick on death's door physically if our physical health was just as our spiritual health? That's what John really says here. He says, I want you to prosper and be in health even like or as your soul prospers. So he basically says, if you're doing what God wants you to do, I want you to be healthy. I want you to be doing well and be successful and things going great for you. But the opposite of that is then, if you're being disobedient to God, don't expect those blessings. And so John points out to us a great truth that we need to prosper first and foremost in our soul. And that needs to be the basis of our true success. But he says he wants Gaius to prosper and to be in health even as his soul is prospering. So we many times try to neglect the soul, neglect the spiritual part of our lives in order to take care of the physical part. And John lets us know that it doesn't work very well that way. And he hopes that Gaius will understand that it doesn't work that way as well. Then we see also that John prays for him. We see this really even though in verse 2 in the New Testament, in the King James Version, it's translated, I wish above all things. Other translations actually do translate it, I pray. I pray that you may be prosperous. And so that idea of wishing for something, of praying for something, wanting what is good and what is best for someone else, that goes along with that concept of brotherly love. We pray for someone and we care about them. Then in verse 5, we see him giving some commendation. Brother Coleman, as he was making the announcements, gave some commendation to some of the brothers and sisters this morning for the good things that they had done. We see examples of that in the New Testament. And John does that here. He gives some commendation for Gaius. He says in verse 5, Beloved, thou doest faithfully whatsoever thou doest to the brethren and to strangers. That's a good thing. He says, you're doing it faithfully. He's giving him a little pat on the back, like Alex said this morning. Giving him just a little bit of encouragement to keep on going and keep on doing those things faithfully. And that, too, is a part of brotherly love. Brotherly love is going to encourage the good things and, of course, would discourage the bad things. We're going to exhort one another. And he certainly does that. In verse 11, he says, Beloved, follow not that which is evil, but that which is good. So he warns him of a danger of following after the evil things and gives him that exhortation, warns him and encourages him to do what's right. And then, of course, brotherly love also has a social aspect to it. In verse 14, he says, I trust I shall see thee, and we shall speak face to face. And how great that is. Now, certainly, we don't get to meet all of our brethren throughout the world. Many of them live in places where we could never speak to them face to face. But what a joy it is for those that we do know and those that we can come in contact with to be able to be together and to speak face to face and have that social interaction. After this morning's assembly, we're going to have a fellowship meal where we'll have an opportunity to do a little bit of that. Have some of that social interaction with one another that shows our brotherly love for one another. We want to look at Gaius a little bit. This person must have been very special in order for John to write an entire letter to him. There aren't many letters in the New Testament written specifically to people. And so there must have been something that John saw in Gaius that made him think, this is someone I really need to write to encourage in some way or another. And we see that being the case. As we look at Gaius, we see that he is a Christian that's worth knowing. As we look at the characteristics John describes in him, we see what a wonderful Christian man Gaius truly was. And we, those of us who are men, should hope to strive to be more like Gaius than perhaps some others that we read about in the New Testament. And of course, women would be proud to have a husband like this man. Let's look at some of the things about him. We notice, first of all, that he is dedicated to the truth. In verse number 3, John says, I rejoiced greatly when the brethren came and testified of the truth that is in you, and even as you walk in the truth. So he allows the truth to live in him, and he lives his life by the truth. He allows both of those things. The truth is in him, and he walks in the truth. Now, there are some people who may have the truth in them, but they don't live it. And we call those people hypocrites. They know what they ought to do, and they may even be faking like they're doing it, but they're not really doing it. There are other people who may be doing some of the things of truth, but they aren't doing it because they have the truth in them. Maybe they're doing it to please a boyfriend or girlfriend, or to please their parents, or just because they had some other ulterior motive. They wanted the praise of men, perhaps. But this man, Gaius, was walking in the truth. He was living it, and he had the truth living in him. But more than that, he was well spoken of. In verse 3, we see, the brethren came and testified about it. When the brothers came to John, they told John about Gaius. Now that's a good thing. That's a good sign. When you go somewhere else, who do you talk about? Do you talk about the good things about other Christians in the church? Or can you not think about anything good to say about anybody that you know in the church? See, when these Christians left their congregation, traveled, and came to where John was, they told John about Gaius. And they testified about the good things he was doing. We all need to strive to have that be the case, that when others go somewhere and somebody asks, well, what about the church in Butler? How is it doing? That people would remember, well, so-and-so there is really helping the church out. Really a worker in the church. Really doing what's right. Really standing for the truth and living the truth, just like the people said about Gaius. There's no greater compliment that can be given than to be well spoken of by others and not have to brag about yourself. Somebody that has to brag about themselves obviously isn't doing too much that's all that good, or other people would be bragging about them. When you think about that in terms of other things, if a restaurant or a car company or any number of other things, if it's good, if other people have gone there and eaten at that restaurant, if people have bought that car and driven that car, and if they've bragged about that to their friends, that restaurant or that car maker isn't going to have to spend nearly as much money on advertising, because people are doing their advertising for them. But when you see some of these things that are advertised on TV all the time, you think, you know, they must not be too awful good. if they're having to advertise themselves so much, now certainly with companies in the world, they're going to advertise some at any rate. But as Christians, when we hear ourselves talking about all the good things I've done, and I've done this, and I've done that, we need to ask ourselves, what am I doing? What am I thinking? We don't hear anywhere in here that Gaius ever bragged about himself. That he ever said anything about how good a Christian he was. Other people are saying all the good things about him. The brethren came and told John about it, and John now is writing it in the letter back to Gaius to tell him what he's heard, and this letter then got included in the New Testament so that Christians throughout the ages would read about Gaius and what a great fellow he was. And we're going to run across another man a little further down who was probably one who bragged about himself a lot. And we're going to see what John has to say about that man in just a moment. But we see he was well spoken of there in verse 3 and also in verse 6. He talks about how he has done faithfully all these things for the brethren and for strangers. And then in verse 6 he says, which have borne witness of your charity or of your love before the church. And so John points out something else. That another witness, another person, another situation talking and speaking about the good that Gaius is doing. All of the things that he has done to the other brethren and even to strangers. He has done all of these good things so that it jumps out that here is a Christian man who is living the life. Now, the old saying, you can't talk the talk and then not walk the walk. Gaius was a man who was talking the talk and walking the walk, and he was doing what Jesus wanted him to do. And we want to be encouraged to be like that. Then we see also there in verse number 5 that he faithfully did these things. God defines what faithfulness truly is back in the book of 1 Samuel. In 1 Samuel chapter 2, in verse number 35, God is talking about how he is going to replace Eli. And he explains a few things about what he's looking for. We see in 1 Samuel chapter 2 and in verse number 35, God says, I will raise me up a faithful priest. God said he's going to raise up not just any old priest, but he's going to raise up a faithful priest. And now he's going to define what faithful means. That shall do according to that which is in my heart and in my mind. And I will build him a sure house, and he shall walk before my anointed forever. So he says, a faithful priest or teacher or preacher or Christian, for that faithfulness is defined as doing what God wants us to do. Doing what's in God's heart and God's mind, not what's in our own heart and our own mind. But doing what God wants. And that's what we see of Gaius. That he is one who does faithfully. Notice what it says. You do faithfully whatever you do to the brethren and to strangers. In every instance, he was doing faithfully, according to what Paul says. When he was treating the brethren, he was treating them the way that God wanted him to treat them. When he was treating strangers, he was treating those strangers in the way that God wanted him to. He was doing it faithfully. And then we see, of course, also, he is hospitable. We see that there. He helps strangers. He's doing these things faithfully for brethren and for strangers. He's hospitable, and he is also a helper of missionaries. He's a helper of the mission works that are going on. And we see that here in verse number 7, as well as verse number 6. He says, which have borne witness of thy charity before the church, whom if thou bring forward on their journey after a godly sort, thou shalt do well, because that for his name's sake they went forth, taking nothing of the Gentiles. He's talking about some missionaries that came through. And he says about that Gaius was able to send them on their way, and because of his help, because of what he was able to do for them, they didn't have to take money from the Gentiles. These missionaries apparently were going to preach the gospel to the Gentiles. And instead of having to go to those Gentiles and say, look, you need to pay us so we can have a way to live, Gaius supported them. Gaius gave them the financial means to be able to go and to do that. It's very similar and reminds me much of what Paul had said to the Corinthians when he said, I robbed other churches to preach to you so that I wouldn't ask you of anything, ask anything from you. And that's what Paul did. He got his money from churches that were already established in order to preach to those that hadn't heard the gospel. And apparently that's the case with these missionaries. And they came through and Gaius supported them, gave them that money, that financial aid that they needed to be able to move forward on their journey, verse 6 tells us. And then we see also in this book, going back up to what Paul had said about his health and his soul prospering, we see a barometer or a gauge for true prosperity. All around us we see people who are rich, we see people who are famous, we see people who are successful at one thing or another, and all of these things people use to gauge prosperity in one way or another. But that's not what the Bible uses to gauge it. In fact, John here uses quite a different standard. He says, I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in health, even as your soul prospers. He said, that's how well I want you to prosper in the rest of your life. I want you to do as well in the rest of your life as you do with your spiritual life. That's the true measure, the true barometer of prosperity. Doesn't matter how many houses and cars and property, how much property and how many businesses and how many millions of dollars and all of these things that somebody has. It doesn't matter if there are pictures on the front of every magazine in the United States, if there is information about them on every news show. All that doesn't matter. What really matters is how is your soul prospering. John gets it down to that simple thing. Then we see also something about Gaius that's very interesting. We see that he's a man who is willing to give up some things of his own in order to advance the cause of Christ. In verse 7, we see that, because that for his name's sake they went forth taking nothing of the Gentiles. Gaius could have said, well, look, I can help you a little bit, but, you know, I really need my own resources to take care of my own things. But instead, Gaius sacrificed. He gave up his own excess, his own extra, his own fund for a rainy day, or whatever it may be. He was willing to go the extra mile and forego his own right. It was his right. He didn't have to give them the money. They could very easily have gone to the Gentiles. But Gaius said that he was willing to give those things so that that wouldn't happen. And John recognized that. He sees that. Because that for his name's sake, they went forth, taking nothing of the Gentiles. Because of the fact that Gaius was willing to help them, they wouldn't have been able to make it as they wanted to if it hadn't been for Gaius. They would have had to try it another way. Then we come to the second man in this book, and that is Diotrephes. In verse 9, we first come across Diotrephes. In verse 9, it says, I wrote unto the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to have the preeminence among them, receives us not. Imagine that. Can you imagine the church receiving a letter from one of the apostles? And a man in that church not being willing to allow the church to receive it and not being willing for that apostle even to come, or for any messengers that he may have sent, or whatever it may be. Can you imagine a man like that? That would stand up against the apostles of the Lord's church, those who were specially chosen, and this wasn't just any apostle either. This was the apostle John. This was the apostle that Jesus loved, probably his closest disciple during his lifetime. And Diotrephes won't receive him and those that are coming with him. He says, he will receive us not. Can you imagine? But John does say that he is going to come anyway. Doesn't matter whether he's been invited or whether he's welcomed by this Diotrephes or not. He's coming anyway, and he says, when I come, or if I come, I will remember this deed which he does. I'm going to remember it. Now, Diotrephes probably thought he was pretty hot stuff. See, apparently, it says that he wanted to have the preeminence in the church. He probably was one who would stand up and brag about himself and talk about all the great things he was doing for that church. And I was here from the time this church was founded. And, well, let me tell you, if it wasn't for me, this church would have folded a long time ago. And y'all better listen to me. That's the kind of man Diotrephes was. And what John says about him is, I will remember his deeds. We see in Diotrephes a bad spirit, the wrong spirit. And just as we want to be like Gaius and want to be a Christian of a spirit like Gaius had, we want to avoid having the spirit of Diotrephes. We want to avoid that as far as we possibly can. We see his heart was wrong. He had too much pride. He was prating against us, that being John the Apostle and others with him, with malicious words, and not content therewith, neither doth he himself receive the brethren, and forbiddeth them that would, and casteth them out of the church. What man thinks that he has the authority to cast somebody else out of the church? This man was suffering from a heart full of pride. He had lifted himself up to be equal with God and say, I have the right to kick people out of the church. The wrong heart. And then we see his tongue. His tongue. He was going about prating or speaking against us with malicious words. His tongue was full of malice. Malice, as you know, is one of the works of the flesh, not one of the works of the Spirit by any means. Malice is a work of the flesh. And he was full of these malicious words. Then, of course, he overstepped his authority. He wanted to have the preeminence among the church, even to the degree he didn't want anybody that might give him any competition. And he wasn't even going to allow John the Apostle to come to the church. He wouldn't receive him, verse 9 says. That's, he had overstepped his authority, any authority. Even the apostles wouldn't have had the kind of authority that this man is trying to take upon themselves. To take upon himself, rather. And then, of course, he is what we might call a control freak. Or some sort of a mania about controlling the situation. We see that he wants to control everyone. Not only, it's not good enough that he won't receive the brethren, but even those that would, he won't let them have the brethren come. It would be one thing for me to say, well, I'm not going to let brother so-and-so say, brother Enlow's coming on the 25th. It'd be one thing for me to say, well, I'm not going to let him stay in my house. I'm not going to welcome him. But it'd be going even a step further to try to tell all of you, you can't have him stay in your house either. See, that's what Diotrephes is. He's going, not only himself and ruling what he'll do, but he's trying to control what everybody else in the church will do. There are people like that still around the world today. People in the church like that. Some churches are controlled by a man like Diotrephes, and that's a sad situation. Because there may be good Christian people in that church that want to do what's right, but Diotrephes in their church won't let them. He controls everything. He runs everything. He's become an eldership of one. He's become a pastor over that church, and he's deciding what's right for that church. And that's not the way the New Testament says it's supposed to be. It shouldn't be that way. And then we see, not only would he not let these people receive the brethren, but he was even kicking them out of the church. So I tell you, if you let a brother come and stay in your house, I'm going to kick you out of the church. What is this guy thinking? He certainly doesn't have the Spirit of Christ in his life. In this case, Diotrephes had drawn his lines of fellowship in a way that was too narrow. He wasn't allowing even other faithful Christians into his circle. And there are churches like that. There are many churches like that in the world today who draw their circles and they say, if you aren't just like we want you to be, you're not a Christian. We won't have anything to do with you, and you can't come see us, and we won't come. And they draw their lines that way. Now certainly it's possible to go too far to the other extreme as well, to just allow any and everything to go and still be in fellowship. But Diotrephes here had the problem of wanting to exclude even those that God had included, even those that were faithful Christians, and he was excluding them from his fellowship. Then we see a very interesting thing in verse number 11. We see in verse number 11 that we need to discriminate. Now we often think of discrimination as being a bad thing. When we think about discrimination, we think about discrimination based on race, or we think about discrimination based on somebody can't get a job because they're wrong religion, or because of their sex, or something of that nature. But there is more to discrimination. The actual word discrimination carries with it no bad connotations. It's just the way that we have used the word to determine that it's something that's bad. The word discriminate simply means to decide between. Make a decision between. And that's what we want to talk about here in 3 John. Look at verse 11. Beloved, follow not that which is evil, but that which is good. That would be impossible for us to follow the good and not the evil unless we discriminate between what's good and what's evil. We've got to discriminate. And then he says, in the second half of that, he that doeth good is of God, but he that doeth evil hath not seen God. See, we even are told that we can discriminate between people. We can know which people are of God and which people aren't of God by what they do. We can make those calls. There's so many people out there in the world that say, you can't judge me. You can't say what I'm doing is bad. How can you say what I'm doing is any worse than what you're doing? Well, here's the way. First, we've discriminated between what's good and what's evil. And then we know from the Bible here that those who do evil have not seen God. They're not of God. And so we can make that call. We can judge those things. And we can see very clearly. And we notice that he puts this verse, this sentence, is right after he has just talked about Diotrephes. He's letting the Christians know, you need to make a call here. There's right and there's wrong. There's good and there's evil. And if somebody's doing evil, they're not of God. He's letting them know they need to make a call on Diotrephes. They need to let it be known that they're not going to follow him as long as he's doing these things he ought not do. It would be very interesting to know what happened in this church. Did Gaius and the others in that congregation stand up against Diotrephes and get him out of that leadership role that he had taken on himself? We don't know. It would be interesting to find out. But we do see very clearly what John is trying to let them know, that Diotrephes doesn't the law. He is not of God. We've seen that he's doing these evil things. He's got these wrong, his heart's wrong, his tongue's wrong, his thoughts are wrong, he's overstepped his authority, all of these things he's doing. He's sowing the works of the flesh, and they're just allowing him to continue to do it. And John says, if I come, I will remember what he's doing. Then we see the third man in verse number 12. We see Demetrius. And Demetrius is another man like Gaius, who has a good report of all men and of the truth itself. So Demetrius is another good man. So we've got here in this situation, we've got Gaius and Demetrius, who are both good men, good Christian men, but they're weak. They're allowing this Diotrephes to walk all over them and all over the rest of the church. It's often been said, I know it was very popular around the time of World War II and shortly thereafter, that all that evil needs to succeed is for good men to do nothing. You see, these men may have been good men, and they may have been good Christian men, and they may have been doing everything they could for the brethren, but there was one thing they still needed to do. These two good men needed to stand up for what was right in regards to Diotrephes. They needed to stand against him. In almost every congregation, there will at some point or another come in someone who has a spirit like Diotrephes. And there are three ways that situation can be handled. The first is that it's possible that that man can be controlled and taught and learn better and overcome his bad spirit. That's certainly the best if that can occur. But sometimes that's not possible. The second possibility is that the church is so weak that they allow him to take control. And that's not good. He'll lead that church to destruction every time. The third possibility is that the leadership that's already established in that church will be strong enough to get rid of that man if he won't change. We're very quick many times to, well, I don't say very quick, slower perhaps than we should be, but quicker at least to deal with someone who's doing something that's physically obvious. Someone who's an alcoholic and drinking. Someone who is engaged in immoral sexual relationships. Someone who's out stealing or doing drugs or killing or any of these kind of things. We'll discipline them in the church. But many times, someone like Diotrephes, who has a wrong spirit, who is causing turmoil and problems in the church, will be allowed to go undisciplined. We have to realize that all of those types of activities, that malicious speaking that he was doing, the pride that he had, his overstepping his authority, those things are just as bad as those people that are out here engaged in the other activities that we mentioned a moment ago. So we need to remember to not be a respecter of persons. God is not a respecter of persons, and we need not be either. Then finally, we want to see this final note. Every Christian is important. Every Christian is important. John only mentioned these three men in this letter to this church, but that doesn't mean that the others weren't important. As we see, he tried to write a letter to the whole church, and Diotrephes wouldn't receive him, wouldn't receive them. So he tried to write to the whole church. But here in verse 14 he says, I trust I shall shortly see thee, and we shall speak face to face. Peace be to thee. Then notice the end of this. He says, our friends salute thee. Greet the friends by name. By name. You know, oftentimes when I go and meet somewhere someone who has been here for one reason or another, and they'll say, well, when you go back, tell the brethren I said hello. Sometimes, in those cases, that person may mention a particular individual or a particular family by name and say, and be sure to tell so-and-so that I said hello. That shows the importance of the relationship between them. John shows the importance of every Christian by telling Gaius to greet the friends by name. Greet those Christian brothers and sisters by name. We know how important it is for people to know our name and to use our name. We know how discouraging it can be when somebody forgets our name or says it wrong, pronounces it wrong. That can be kind of discouraging. We say, well, this person doesn't care much about me. They don't even remember my name. But John was showing his care for the church there and God's care for every Christian when he said, greet the friends by name. That's what Jesus had said. The shepherd knows his sheep. He knows them by name. Jesus knows each and every one of us in the church by name. And each and every one of us is important to Him. Every Christian is important. If you're here this morning and you're not a Christian, you need to get in the truth and let the truth get in you, just as Gaius had it in him. You can do that by first hearing the Word and then believing it. Then by repenting of your sins, as Acts 2:38 tells us, confessing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God, as Acts 8 and verse 37 says, and then being buried with Him in baptism, as Mark 16:16 and so many other passages as well teach that we must do to be saved. Then, of course, you must rise to walk a new life and live faithfully to Christ until death. If you're here this morning and you are a Christian, but you haven't been living faithfully, perhaps you need to work harder to imitate Demetrius and Gaius in some way. Or perhaps you may need to get some of those attitudes that Diotrephes had out of your life so that you don't become a problem for the church. If you have any need to respond to the invitation, we ask that you do so as we stand and as we sing.